Hello and welcome to the Sky U podcast by the Daily Gopher. I'm Chris, Go AU Fur. With me this week is Andy, Gopher Guy 05.
Hello.
Blake, Iowa Gopher. It's
good to be back.
Steve, Zips of Akron.
We're here, but not for much longer.
And rounding out this illustrious full starting five, U Street.
Hey, y'all. Also, Steve, really, really keeping it light to begin the podcast here.
I just meant for basketball. Life is in great shape.
Death will come for all of you at some point. Don't overreact to it, Street.
Now it's dark. Spectre, it
follows us. Shall we talk about a transfer?
Yeah, as long as we're talking about sad things and death. So Isaiah Washington, we're going to lead off with the jelly transfer. Isaiah Washington has officially put himself into the transfer portal. That magically named new thing that just, I don't know why that was never a thing before, but suddenly there's a transfer portal and we're all the beneficiaries of it. I'm just going to turn it right over to Steve. What do you think ultimately was what held up Isaiah Washington from being a performer here at Minnesota?
Well, I think and anyone who watched the season this year, by the end of the season, probably isn't surprised that he's transferring anyway. He barely played at the end of the year. I think he sat for five games straight and didn't even get any run until the last game of the year against Michigan State, where he almost had to play because nobody was left. And, you know, it just looked like he had a different game for a different program. Clearly a skilled player, clearly good at handling the ball. He has good vision. But he has to be a scorer, and I don't think we ever got over that with him, where he was not okay being the third option on the court. We needed a point guard who was going to deliver to Jordan Murphy and Amir Coffey and set Gabe Kalischer up for open threes, and that just didn't seem to be Jelly's game, and it took us a season and a half to figure that out. He, great guy. But it was always kind of suspicious too that, you know, he never got called out in, you know, Patino's blog posts, and it seemed like there might have been something going on behind the scenes, and who knows what that is. But just the fact that he all of a sudden just did not play ever should speak more about what was going on than you might have been wondering. I don't know, Street. What do you think?
Yeah. The other thing for Jelly, at least on on-court performance, is it seems that Patino places a relatively high premium on the ability to know your assignments on defense. Now, whether that's true all the way down the roster. So for example, Michael Hurt tends to always be in the right position on defense. He's just a little bit slow for the game, but he doesn't see run either. But with Isaiah Washington, a lot of times what you'd see on defense, him just sagging really deep either into the lane or off his man for a potential help steal situation and then leave open a wide open three. And almost invariably, Patino would immediately yank him as a result. So they weren't on the same page on defense, and I fully agree with Steve. Isaiah Washington will thrive in a program for which every bit of the offense bends around him. And I don't mean that negatively. I mean that every aspect of his game that is fantastic relies on him not only having the ball, but him basically doing everything and people setting people up for him, i.e. like Russell Westbrook, though not anywhere near as good. In terms of where he's going to transfer, hopefully he finds a program for which he's going to have success. I thought that he's doing all the right things in public in terms of his announcements. He's never seemed to have any problems whatsoever, appears to be a very good kid, a very smart kid, all of which is great. He also made a note in his post that he had sort of lost the love of basketball and had been seeing a therapist for a bit. And I just want to commend, even if there may be some potential motivation a little bit there in terms of waiver eligibility, that especially in this day and age, with the reach that Isaiah Washington has, being willing to be open about saying that it was important that he went and talked to some other people and got help for what he was dealing with at the time and the different challenges that he was facing was pretty fantastic.
I also thought it was interesting too, just at the end of last season when the when that god awful season was coming to an end. But we, you know, the team had basically given up. There was no, everyone was gone. There was no one left in the team, and you know, Jelly was out there getting 25, 30, 35 minutes a game, and he was scoring a ton. But that, you know, no one was out there to help him out. Coffee wasn't there. Kalischer wasn't here yet. Reggie Lynch was gone. And now he, all of a sudden, he's scoring, you know, 10, 15, sometimes even 20, 25 points a game. You could see what he was capable of, even at a Big Ten level, when he was the guy who, you know, had the ball and was the guy who had to be scoring. He was putting up some of these performances against the, you know, Michigan, Michigan States, Indiana's, and Wisconsin's of the league. So, to echo your point, Street, if he goes to a place where he's going to be the man, even at a mid-major level, he should be well equipped to actually make some noise.
Well, hopefully, you know, we can look and see the Gophers make some noise next year before we get to kind of our expectations for the upcoming season. Maybe let's talk a little bit about kind of final thoughts about what we just saw and what was kind of, honestly, for me, was a really kind of exciting end to the year. The team kind of went on a tear. I honestly felt we were done after Rutgers and Pitino was getting fired, and then that's not at all what happened. So, Street, kind of what are your season recap thoughts?
Yeah, as I wrote, and not just because I'm hip and with the youth and go to concerts and whatnot, that a lot of what we've seen over Pitino's tenure so far, he should get extended, to be very clear. You've got two NCAA tournaments in the last 3 years, barring an absolute epic injury collapse, plus Reggie Lynch being Reggie Lynch. The team would have been in the NCAA tournament 3 years in a row. There is absolutely no reason whatsoever that a coach who has made the NCAAs 3 years in a row would be in the same position that Pitino was in this year. So that counterfactual goes away and probably would have been competing for a much higher seed in the Big Ten. They are 35 seconds, give or take, from having another winning record in the Big Ten. But the challenge that all of Pitino's teams have had, and this has been true even on the teams that were great, so the five seed a couple of years ago, is they are a ridiculously high variance team. It's a team, and we talked about it on podcasts throughout this year as well as on the blog, that the Gophers this season never really put together, with the exception of the Purdue game, which I think was their most complete game of the season, offense and defense, never put together a full game. What you saw against Purdue, partially a matchup thing, Minnesota always kind of played well against Purdue, but was, oh, this team, when everyone is on and everyone is playing well, can beat every team in the conference that is not named Michigan State. That was a Sweet 16, maybe Elite 8 level basketball team. And that is the same team that got blown out by double digits to Illinois, Ohio State, and Boston College. So it's difficult to sort of think about the season if you're optimistic about Pitino's tenure as, like, this went absolutely amazingly. But I think equally, if you are very negative towards Pitino, you have to ignore a lot of really positive things that were happening from a development standpoint. Lastly, Pitino's teams over the last few years, in terms of the teams that were not crippled by injuries, tend to start playing very well in mid to late February and early March. Now, it would be nice if they were playing well before that as well. That would be cool. But if you have to try and find a place in your schedule where you want to play really well, that would be the time period to do it. So I think that there is a lot of room for growth for Pitino. I think that looking forward to next season, not only from an on-court standpoint but also recruiting, it's going to be another very critical year for him in some sense. I think you almost run into the same question that you ran into this year if they don't make the NCAA tournament next year. So that'll be interesting for people who get paid a large amount of money to make those decisions. But ultimately, what I would view this season is, as I said at the beginning of the year, in order for Pitino to keep his job, he has to make the NCAA tournament, and he maybe even has to win a game in the NCAA tournament. He made the NCAA tournament. He won a game in the NCAA tournament. Consequently, I would say that this season, at least in that sense, is a success.
Steve, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think before the season started, you know, Pitino getting to the tournament and winning a game in the tournament was basically the baseline for him to be considered for, you know, extending his tenure here. And I think he did that. There were some pitfalls along the way, but that's why we also need to look at the season in totality, not just taking a step back after like the Rutgers game, for instance, and being like, all right, we're done. I mean, I'm as guilty as anyone of busting out the pitchfork and ready to go to town, but you gotta, you know, finish strong, and that's what we needed him to do. Looking at the season as a whole, obviously Jordan Murphy was fantastic. It's gonna be a long time before we see someone who's gonna contribute that much. It's really a shame that we, you know, won't get to see him play anymore. Really, really exciting. But what stuck out to me, I think, was just this freshman class, and we don't talk enough about how big of a core that's going to be for the next 3 years, unless Daniel Oturu has crazy jump where he starts to get NBA looks. But we should be safe saying that Gabe Kalischer, Jarvis Amursa, Oturu hopefully will be here for the long haul. That's a really, really solid core to build around. And who would have thought before the season started that Gabe Kalischer was going to be one of our leading scorers? He was really changed the look of the offense. We haven't had a knockdown three-point shooter in such a long time, and it really changed how the team attacked. Eric Curry, I don't know what's going to be going on with him. It's too bad because when he's on the court, he looks good. He seems like kind of a glue guy, but he also hasn't been healthy for 2 years now, and he's going under the knife one more time. We're going to need him for front court depth for sure. He's going to need to be Oturu's wingman, and he needs to be healthy to do that. And we also haven't seen a full season out of him before either. And I think my other closing thought for the season is, what is the Amir Coffey we're going to get next year if, and I'm knocking on wood, he comes back after exploring the NBA draft? But who are we going to get? We had some crazy highs from him where he looked like one of the best scorers in the entire league, and we had some, you know, really painfully disappearing moments where he was just forcing it and scoring in single digits, and he ended up at the end of the season the sixth leading scorer in the Big Ten. But among his counterparts up there, he also had, you know, more than 10 games of scoring 11 points or less, which you know, guys like Carson Edwards, Cassius Winston, you know, Lamar Stevens, those guys do not disappear like that. But we also saw Coffey end the season on a very, very strong note where he had, I think, averaged 23, 24 points per game in his final eight games. That's a significant chunk of the season where he was scoring at a very, very high level. And I really, really hope that that's what the type of Coffey we'll see next year, now that he's realized that he can do that and do it consistently.
It'll also help him to play off the ball next year as well. The sort of two money plays that Minnesota had this year, one was everyone clear out and let Jordan go to work in a one-on-one ISO situation, which, not the most efficient, repeatable thing, but Jordan Murphy was so good and so dominant against so many different power forwards this year that was fine. There were at least three games this year where that functionally was their offense in the second half. The other play is a curl to Coffey. So Coffey coming off a high ball screen, curling to the middle of the floor and slashing from his left hand. And if he gets ahead of steam downhill with his left hand, he's nearly unstoppable. Plus, with his height and his vision, anyone who was going to come over had to be coming over from either Oturu or Murphy, and Coffey would frequently just flick the ball over to either one of them and we'd get an easy 2 points. That's a play that they can basically run next year all the time, because Coffey isn't going to have to initiate the offense in the same way, while still being able to put in, oh, this is of course assuming he's coming back, but while still being able to keep the plays that worked in for him as kind of a point forward. And that'll be an interesting storyline, I think, in some level, for how Pitino wants to integrate what he learned this season from Coffey as a point guard, which is not ultimately a successful experiment, I don't think, but there are aspects of it that you could very easily translate next year to put him in a position to be regularly putting up stupid numbers.
So looking ahead to next year, I'm going to bring it over to Andy for a minute. Andy, what would you say your expectations are for next year's team, assuming Amir Coffey comes back?
I mean, with Coffey and with Marcus Carr coming finally be eligible, you know, I honestly think that there's no reason to think that this team shouldn't be able to do just as well as they did this year. I think, you know, I think NCAA tournament is a very easy goal. Competing for the top half of the Big Ten regular season would be a fairly easy goal. You know, it all depends if they can get people back from injuries. You know, with Murphy gone, they'll be missing a lot. But if you can get Eric Curry healthy to play a full season, 100%, and you can get Oturu healthy and stay healthy the entire season instead of, you know, coming off his shoulder surgery, he was, you know, a little raw to start the season. You know, I think the full expectation should be a return to the NCAA tournament. And then, as we've seen, you know, it would be nice to win a game or two, but as long as you get back to the tournament, I don't think you can really argue too much.
Steve, would you agree with that, that a baseline would be at least as successful as this past season?
Yeah, I think obviously losing Murphy is a huge blow, but that's not to say you aren't going to have guys who are going to be able to, you know, fill that gap. You'll have another year of growth from your true freshman. You get hopefully a conference first teamer back in Coffee. That is a lot to build around already, and I would hope that type of core would be enough to get to the NCAA tournament. I don't think losing Murphy and, you know, having backups behind him enough to fill those gaps should be enough talent to get you back. I think it's college basketball. The more guys you can have returning to the next year, the better. And the Gophers have plenty of guys returning next year.
Street, if you had to take a realistically optimistic view of the season, what do you think a fairly reasonable high bar is for the Gophers next year, assuming everybody's healthy and performs at, you know, a relatively reasonable level of to expect?
Sweet 16. That depends a little bit on the spring recruiting period and who they end up pulling in. Will they get a grad transfer? Will they find someone to, at minimum, provide depth at the four if they have a lot of targets? Can they get another point guard to back up Marcus Carr? So that's the first kind of question to run out for the rest of this spring period. And then next season, will Marcus Carr actually be a successful point guard? One of the unfortunate lessons of the Isaiah Washington experience is just because someone comes in with hype doesn't actually mean that they will be successful at this level. What Marcus Carr did seem to bring was, when he was at Pittsburgh, is that he could shoot the ball, not tremendously well, but one would expect that would get a little bit better. And if that's true, you have a true point guard who can shoot threes, which is something that Pitino's offense is quite like. You assume reasonable progression and no injuries from everyone, which means that Coffey, assuming he returns, Oturu, Kalscher, and Curry all get a full offseason, not to rehab, but actually to practice and improve their games, which is something he didn't have before. And that means that your starting five, you have potentially two all Big Ten first team players, although I don't think Oturu will get there. Coffey certainly should. Gabe Kalscher should be in line for a defensive player of the year if he makes a jump. That's a phenomenal core to work around. And you might actually have some bench players who can give you some scoring. If I look at that team and I say sort of what is the reasonable ceiling if one is being optimistic in a homer, that's a Sweet 16 team.
Do you think that that's a very likely outcome, or do you think it's much more likely that we're talking about middle of the road in the Big Ten, decent but not great seed to the NCAA tournament, and hoping to scratch out a second win if we can, if we're lucky, in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think an expectation for next season should be the tournament again. There's enough talent on that team, especially if Coffey comes back, that there's no reason they shouldn't make the NCAA tournament. I think the seed that you're looking for is, once again, probably a 7 or a 10. I think anything above a 7 is probably a bit of an overachievement. If they could get 5 or higher, then I would be quite thrilled about the season. On the low end, you know, scraping by another kind of 10 or maybe even an 11 seed, I think winning one game in the NCAA tournament, especially if you're that low as a seed, would be a nice bonus. But that strikes me as a more reasonable. And then from a floor perspective, I think it's entirely plausible, once again, depending on the Big Ten schedule, because there's the other dynamic that comes in that we don't quite know yet, you might see another 9-11 sort of season. that wouldn't shock me.
The Gophers might be done on the court as a team, but Jordan Murphy has a little bit more to play. Unfortunately, it's not exactly where Andy wants it to be. But Andy, can you break down what Jordan Murphy is going to be doing for kind of his all-star thing here?
Yeah, it looked like it was announced today. Jordan Murphy will be playing in the Reese's College All-Star Game, which if you want to go down to U.S. Bank Stadium, that game will take place at 3:30 on Friday afternoon after all of the open team practices of all the four Final Four teams. 20 of the best seniors in the country are split into two teams, East versus West, and will play against each other. You know, some other names you might recognize: James Palmer Jr. from Nebraska is on the East team. Joining Murphy on the West team, Galen Robinson Jr. from Houston, Barry Brown from Kansas State. So some of the best players in the country will be playing against each other Friday. You know, it's a big, nice recognition and a big event for that. I was hoping Murphy might be either selected, or I'm not sure if he rejected, to play on the Dos Equis 3-on-3 National Championships Big Ten squad. That event's also taking place this weekend at the Mall of America. They're actually playing it right in the Rotunda, which will be kind of a cool experience. But it's basically every single conference gets a team of four seniors together, and they play for money. You win each game at pool play is worth $1,000, and then the grand champion winners will get $100,000. Last year, the Big Ten team, including Nate Mason, won it all in the inaugural tournament. So it doesn't look like Murphy will be playing in that, since he's playing in the Reese's game. So it'll be interesting to see. They haven't announced the Big Ten squad yet, just who will be on that team. But they'll be at the Mall of America this weekend trying to win themselves some cold hard cash and some more bragging rights for the Big Ten.
All right. Well, that seems like a pretty good full plate of basketball. It is still football spring practice, and somehow that's like slid out. I don't think it's slid under the radar for most people, but for me, somehow I just feel a little disconnected from it this year. And so I am excited for us to talk about that. Blake, kind of bringing you in, who do you think, I guess first question for you would be, who do you think is going to be the starting quarterback come the fall?
You know, I think it's going to come down to Zach Anixad and Tanner Morgan. I know that a lot of people are excited about Jacob Clark. He's the true freshman early enrollee out of Texas. He's obviously got a lot of raw talent, but I think he's still a year or two away from being ready for the college level. But I really think it's going to be between Anixad and Morgan. I think a lot of people are probably going to discount Anixad, mostly due to recency bias. I mean, Morgan had some big games towards the end of the season, and he was solid. They didn't ask a ton of him. Mohammed Ibrahim had to carry a lot of the load, and that certainly helped. And Morgan was operating behind an offensive line that had Daniel Flele instead of Sam Schluter at tackle, which certainly benefited the entire offensive line. And also, those last three, four games, they actually had a legitimate defense after the firing of the Gophers defensive coordinator. So circumstances definitely favored Morgan towards the end of the season, but I really think that Anixad, last fall camp, he beat out Tanner Morgan, and I think people just forget about that. I think he's got a higher ceiling than Morgan does. Morgan's maybe a little bit more conservative, more of a game manager. I just think the offense has better potential with Anixad under center, and I think you'll see him back in a starting position again this fall.
I noticed you didn't say Rob Smith's name. Was that because you worried about conjuring him into real life, or did you just forget?
Honestly, I was blanking on it. It's which is good. I've tried to forget the horrors that he brought into our lives the past two seasons. So,
I heard you mention Sam Schluter, obviously, as part of the quarterback discussion. The Gophers are going to be without Danelle Green as a tackle. He's moved on and is pursuing his NFL dreams. That leaves Sam Schluter in line to be a tackle once again. What do you think kind of happens there, Blake? Do we have to should we look to Sam Schluter to improve and take a tackle spot, or are we hoping beyond hope that somebody else, you know, lets him serve as a backup?
Yeah, I think he'll get a shot. Sam Schluter will. The way the offensive line is shaking out right now, is at center with Connor Olsen. He played left guard all last season, but he'll shift over to replace Jared Weiler. At left guard is Curtis Dunlap. He'll be a redshirt freshman. We get a glimpse of him in a starting role in the Quick Lane Bowl. At the other guard position, it will be redshirt sophomore Blaise Andrees, who had a really good redshirt freshman season. And then at right tackle, everyone's favorite 6'10 to 400-pound offensive lineman Daniel Flele. As you mentioned, the big gap or the big hole will be at left tackle, where we had Danelle Green. He was a 3-year starter, so he leaves some big shoes to fill, figuratively and literally. And so far this spring, I know Schluter's kind of has slotted in it at first string. His biggest competition will be Jason Dixon. He was a junior college offensive tackle. Didn't play at all last season. He redshirted and didn't even play in the 4 games that you're allotted for a redshirt. I know that there are rumors that he took what's referred to as an academic redshirt, just didn't play in any games so he could focus on his academics, but sounds like he's good to go. I think his biggest thing will probably be having to shake off a year of no game action. You know, junior college guys, when they come in, you expect them to have an immediate impact, and he basically effectively sat out an entire season. So I'm kind of interested, especially in the spring game, to see how he does. And Schluter, as we all know, his big problem is pass protection. He kind of thrived towards the end of last season, even after losing his starting spot as sort of a blocking tight end. So it'd be interesting to see. I mean, I don't want to say that Schluter's like done, because I think players can improve. To me, it'll be interesting to watch that battle unfold. And there's also a possibility too that you know Brian Callahan and PJ Fleck may shift things around a little bit. I know Curtis Dunlap and Blaise Andrees have also played a little tackle this spring. So I really think it'll be that starting five that we're all expecting. But I do think a left tackle is really going to come down to Schluter versus Dixon. And I don't think it'll be decided in spring by any means. That'll be a battle that continues into the fall.
Andy, this is kind of more of a, I guess, look ahead question than necessarily a spring question, but do you think the Gophers' offense will get more impact out of the running back position or the wide receiver position as the season progresses?
Oof, that's a tough one. That is a really tough call. I will go with the running back position for the lone argument that the wide receivers are still mostly reliant on the quarterback, and while Tanner Morgan and Zach Anakstad have shown flashes of some pretty good play, they still have a ways to go before you can really be a consistent downfield passing threat and really take advantage of all of the gifts. Meanwhile, I mean, we know what Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, and Muhammad Ibrahim can do. So at that point, it's hand them the ball and watch them work their magic. So, I don't think there'll be any team in the country that's going to return the type of running back depth that Minnesota will have this fall, assuming everybody, knock on wood, stays healthy from now until, the end of the season. I'll go running backs, but this is the closest it's been in a very, very long time, and it's not the wide receiver's fault this time. It's definitely still a requirement that the quarterbacks need to get a little bit better.
Street, flipping over to defense, who are you looking to see? Who are you excited to see on the defensive side of the ball, either here in the remaining part of spring practice or moving into the fall?
It's obviously very important to win spring practice, as we know. The best performers in spring practice will always carry over into the actual season. With that said, I think obviously Carter Coughlin moving back far more to a linebacker, Boy Mafe taking potentially over that other sort of rush defensive end slot. He played quite well in the bowl game. That seems to be moving towards spring practice, and he's got a very athletic skill set, especially for being as big as he is. So those would be the two kind of major ones. As a minor side, whoever is going to start at defensive tackle. is to me the big interesting question for the defense, because especially the way that Joe Rossi seems to want to run an offense, or run a defense, sorry, the defensive tackle has to take up a lot of space. They brought in a lot of JUCOs, and obviously the grad transfer from Notre Dame. Whoever wins out that spot is going to be hugely important for the rest of the Gophers' chances next season on defense.
Blake, what do you think the strongest unit will be on the defensive side of the ball, based on what we've heard and seen in the spring, and just what we know about the roster so far?
That's, to me, that's kind of a tough question. I mean, at linebacker, you're kind of set with Thomas Barber and Kamal Martin. They're going to be your two guys. And I mean, Rossi has shown he's going to run a lot of different type of defenses, like 4-2-5, 3-3-5. So the linebacker is pretty strong. Defensive line, as Street mentioned, there's a lot of new faces on there. It's they've certainly got the potential. But again, a lot of that's going to depend on just how that group develops and who emerges. But I honestly really like where the secondary is at right now. So you've got four pretty good corners. You know, Coney Durr, Keandre Thomas, Terrell Smith, and the junior college cornerback, Calvin Clemens, who's on campus now. Those guys are all going to fit into the rotation. Chris Williamson, the transfer from Florida, really found his role last season as a slot corner. I think he really thrived towards the end of the season after I think he was banged up a little bit early on and didn't see the field much. At safety, obviously we've talked about the lack of depth there. They've got a junior college safety coming in the summer. Antoine Winfield, if he can get past the Maryland game, he'll be good. The guy I'm most probably excited to watch is Benny Sapp. From everything I've heard, he's 100%. He played a lot on special teams last year. It sounds like it's between him and Jordan Howden for that other safety spot that was vacated by Jacob Huff, who graduated this offseason. So I really am looking forward to seeing how the secondary come together. I think there's just a lot of good pieces there, and I'm interested to see how they get used and what kind of rotation we see in the fall, because I think it has the potential to be a really strong unit.
I'm going to go around the table here and have each of you answer these next two. Who is the spring enrollee that you're most interested to see in action during the rest of the spring, either on some film coming out of open practice, and open practice you get to attend, or the spring game? And we'll go starting with Andy.
I'm going to have to probably go, I'd like to see, hopefully, Keontae Shad show off. He's going to be playing D-tackle, so it's not as flashy, but if he and Rashad Chaney can really give some more intense depth that center that defensive line, I really think that will help the Gophers a lot coming up here in the fall. So I'm going to be looking forward to when I go to the spring game, seeing if they can definitely work and get some of that inside pressure going on, and see if they can give a lot of trouble to this first team offensive line.
Street, how about you?
I honestly have no idea who all the early spring enrollees are, so I'm going to say Brock Walker, a walk-on from Sioux Falls, who apparently today got the kicking reps.
Walk-on kicker, that's a strong choice.
Hashtag like Big Ten.
Blake? Blake, how about you?
I'll probably go with Calvin Clemens. He's the junior college cornerback that's on campus this spring. I long for the days when we had physical corners like Eric Murray and Brian Body Calhoun. And from what I've heard, he's exactly come from that mold. So I'm really curious to see if he could break into the rotation, maybe even get a starting spot. But let's bring back those Eric Murray days.
Andy, this is kind of a philosophical question. How does one win a spring game?
You don't get anybody hurt. That's how you win the spring game. I think as we've seen, spring games are always sort of a show-off for the less heralded players, as we've seen such vaunted spring game MVPs like James Johansson and Jonathan Femi Cole, players like that who, have had major spring games, but then you'd see very little of them in the regular season. So, it's fun for fans. It's fun to watch. But I can guarantee you PJ Fleck is going to hold out a vast majority of the players that you're going to be watching for the majority of the season in the fall. So the key is those of who players will be playing in the fall play, do not get hurt.
Andy, am I correct that last season you went to the spring game and saw Nnamdi Abdul-Mohamed?
I did. It was a very cold Thursday evening, and he sat about four seats down from me in the center of the field and then committed, which is... Well, go ahead.
I'm going to say then that I'm going to cut the line and say that the way you win the spring game is have Andy sit next to whatever recruit we really want.
I like it. I like it.
There's just something about Andy's aura, just being in close proximity to him. I think that these recruits really get a good sense of what Minnesota's all about.
And I'm pretty sure I've told this story on here before, but it just goes along with it, is that, you know, not to pull the kids these days, but, I mean, he was watching the spring game, and he could not have looked more disinterested. He was flipping through his phone the entire time. He didn't watch any of the game at all. So, you know, I didn't think there was any chance in hell that he was going to come to Minnesota, and lo and behold, he'll be here in June. So it just goes to show you that spring games really don't mean a damn thing.
Blake, we've gotten the whimsical answer. We've gotten the practical answer. Where do you come down on how do you win a spring game?
You know, score more points. Someone's got to win. I think Flex got ahead of system of scoring every year. It's a very intricate, very thought-out system. You know, I haven't gone back and tracked, you know, which team, if players on certain teams fare better, it's something I really need to look into. I'll probably spend a couple hours next couple weeks looking into it, but you got to get those points, man. That's what the game's all about.
I want to be clear that unlike previous spring games where the points were kind of weird, you do realize the intricate system was you score a touchdown and points go on the board.
I thought there was more to it than that. I thought there was, like, because defense got like points for sacks, things like that. Or maybe that was another year.
I think they were tracking internally, and I remember Kill doing something exactly like that. But last year, unless I'm mistaken, it was you score points the normal way, and they go on the scoreboard the normal way. Am I wrong about that?
Honestly, based on the offense for a lot of the last year, that is an intricate system of scoring. So hopefully that's not true next year either.
Touche. All right. Well, the softball team continues to go along doing very good things. Andy, you got a quick update for softball for us?
Yeah, the softball team, you know, struggled a little bit in the non-conference season, but they played a ton of ranked opponents, and it's paying off for them now. Gophers have started the Big Ten season with two straight three-game sweeps, or 6-0. And now have the 8th ranked RPI in the country, which is now apparently a program record. For those who don't follow the softball NCAA tournament, which is probably 99.5% of the people listening to this right now, top 16 seeds will host a regional. Top 8 seeds get to host a super regional. So if the committee actually handed it out straight by RPI, which they never do, you know, the Gophers would actually be in a position to even host a super regional right now. That number 8 number will most likely go down as the Big Ten's depth is not very good. Although, for the first year in quite a while, the Big Ten has a majority of their teams ranked in the top 100 in RPI instead of most years where about half the Big Ten is below that number. So even when you're sweeping teams, your RPI is dropping. But if the Gophers can hold serve in the Big Ten and do as they've done the last few seasons, there's a fairly good chance that Minnesota should have a fairly strong argument to be able to host a NCAA regional come May here. But then again, that doesn't mean anything, as the Gophers were the 16th ranked RPI team 2 years ago and ended up getting sent to Alabama instead of hosting a regional, and we all know how well that ended out. So the Gophers just need to keep doing what they're doing. You know, they're missing two-time Big Ten Player of the Year and two-time All-American Kendall Lindemann at catcher, who got off to a slow start after transferring to Florida, but I think in her last four games has something like 6 home runs and 15 RBI. It's just stupid. But the Gophers are getting production from a couple of freshmen. Natalie Den Hartogs was named the Big Ten Freshman of the Week for the second week in a row. She leads the Big Ten with 11 home runs, 39 RBIs, and is slugging .813 on the season. So not bad from somebody who they didn't really expect to play that big of a role coming into the season, but they just got to keep on winning and beating up on the teams they need to, and see what they can do as we get closer to the end of the year.
I'd like to call out whoever runs the Minnesota softball Twitter account. You are the real MVP. I see your good tweets. I want more of them. All right, well, it's about that time. Before we kind of wrap it up, I think it's time for me to make sure that Blake is initiated into the HelloFresh update. This will be Blake's first time on the podcast with the HelloFresh update.
It's really the only reason I'm here, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Blake, so I want to let you know one of the good things about HelloFresh. It's when you're me and you don't make the meals as quickly as you need to, many of the refrigerated items have actually quite a shelf life, and they will be around long enough for you to purchase additional vegetables to replace the ones that you let spoil. That's a great selling point of HelloFresh. And dry ingredients are dry ingredients, so those don't go bad. So if you're me and you have this delicious box and you put it, you know, everything into the fridge and then don't do anything with it for a week and the vegetables are not so great, don't worry. You can still go out and buy things in the store like a regular person who knows how to cook. And for that, I thank you, HelloFresh.
And we would also like to thank HelloFresh if they ever decide they want to sponsor this podcast.
Yep, because I know I'm doing such a great job of selling the product right now. But in the meantime, you've collected my money, so I think we're all even, and you can give it back to us with some ad revenue. But until that happens well off in the future, you can expect many SkyU podcasts in the meantime. Go Gophers. SkyU Ma. Row the boat.
Go Gophers. Row the boat.